The singer Little Jimmy Scott once said of David Sanborn, he doesn't play the sax, he sings through the sax. And you can hear this multi-Grammy winner doing just that, not only on his new CD just out from Decca called Only Everything, but he'll also be performing from tomorrow through next Sunday, the 14th, at the Blue Note on West 3rd Street in Greenwich Village. And I'm delighted to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Do you think of yourself as singing on the saxophone? And I remember Ben Webster used to say that he would hear the lyrics to a song as he improvised on it.
Yeah, well, that's a, you know, that observation is really true, that it helps you to understand how to phrase a song if you know the words.
Do certain instruments lend themselves to that more than others? Saxophone, the trumpet, perhaps?
I mean, in my opinion, saxophone is closest to the human voice. It's got, you know, because of the reed and the, you know, the complex vibration of the instrument, it's very close to the human voice, so it's very expressive. And I think it's just an approach that, you know, some people have. I always thought of it as a very kind of vocal instrument, you know, and I relate it to singers, so it seemed natural to me to kind of approach it that way.
Well, jazz it actually encourages people to find their own sound. Find a voice of their own. The word voice is used, actually.
Yeah.
How do you do that? I mean, because I can hear two notes from Charlie Parker, I know it's Charlie Parker.
Yeah.
Hear two notes from David Sanborn, I know it's David Sanborn.
Or Sonny Rollins or Miles Davis.
Well, I don't want to confuse instruments.
I see what you're saying, yeah. I don't know. I guess it's just... It's really a miss. It's a tough question to give a simple answer to.
Well, how did it happen with you? You started off, as I understand it, actually started playing the saxophone because you had polio.
Well, yeah, that was kind of the catalyst for my parents, you know, encouraging me to play a wind instrument. Mm-hmm. Because when I was 11 years old, I had polio when I was a kid, when I was 3.
And it's not apparent now.
Well, it affected me pretty heavily. I was in an iron lung for almost a year, and then paralyzed from the neck down for almost a year after that.
Wow.
So from 3 to 5, I was kind of out of commission. I spent a lot of time, obviously, on my back and, you know, in bed. So I listened a lot to the radio as a kid, and, you know, I'd hear this, you know, late at night with all the lights off, you know, listening to this great music coming through the air, and it's just like, you know, theater of the mind. You know, you just make up these great stories, and it just... Radio is such a personal medium that, you know, you establish these relationships with these people, the personalities on the air and the instruments.
You know how you know that when jazz musicians talk at the end of a set, they always sound like they're trying to do the DJ sound. Well, so thanks so much for coming by.
We're all guilty.
And it's, I think I hear Mort Figa, I hear Symphony Sid, or whoever they grew up with.
That's right. Well, in my area, it was a guy named Spider Burks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. He used to have a radio show from a club called the Blue Note in East St. Louis, Illinois. And the radio booth was a booth about maybe a third of this size. It was a utility closet behind the bar. Mm-hmm. And they cut through the plasterboard with like a knife and some and duct taped up a piece of plexiglass to keep the sound out, but the bandstand was on the other end of the club, and while he was announcing, you could hear the boom, 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 boom of the organ and the band playing, and it was so atmospheric. I mean, it was totally accidental.
And you were listening when you were very young, three or four years old? You were the youngest jazz fan in America?
Well, I was listening to the radio, so there was a lot of country music, Hank Williams and Patti Page, and, you know, all different kinds of music. A lot of saxophones, like Billy May, Jimmy Dorsey.
So you picked up an alto because it was easier to play?
I picked the alto of all the saxophones, but I knew I wanted to play the saxophone after I heard the Ray Charles Band.
Mm.
And Hank Crawford and David Newman, who were two great saxophone players in that band.
And how old were you then?
11.
And you pay tribute to all three, Ray Charles, Fathead Newman, and Hank Crawford on this.
On this record and the previous one as well.
So you did an earlier album, which was called...
Hearing Gone.
Yeah. And you did a lot of tributes to these people. And then you felt you still hadn't covered all the material that you wanted to?
I just liked inhabiting that music. you know, I just kind of like being there. It was a, it's a place and a time for me, and it just, it felt natural.
Had you always intended to do a second homage to Ray Charles?
No, I there's not a lot of premeditation that goes into, you know, what I'm going to do next. And it just seemed, for me, I knew I wanted to kind of stay in that same vein, but I wanted to kind of expand. In a way, it's a little bit autobiographical because I grew up listening to organ players as well. And Hammond B3 organ was a very big part of my early listening and playing experience.
And Ray Charles was a keyboard player who also played alto.
Exactly. Exactly. He's great. He was a great alto player.
So you never had the opportunity to play with him, did you?
No. We met on several occasions, and we worked opposite each other, and we'd always talked about doing something together, and then just never happened.
Well, how would you explain that he and his musicians, of all of the possible influences, stuck with you that way?
Well, I mean, his music is a combination of all the great forms of American music, jazz, gospel, and rhythm and blues. And he combined those various styles in his own unique way with a, you know, kind of a more of an accent on the jazz side, because the harmonies were very sophisticated, but they were still church and still had that backbeat of rhythm and blues. And there was something about that mix that really appealed to me. And also, growing up in St. Louis, there was a very strong kind of blues strain to a lot of the jazz that was going on there. So it just seemed very natural.
And
to me.
St. Louis was a hotbed of jazz at that time.
Well, it
produced so many
was,
great
yeah,
musicians.
Exactly.
Including Miles Davis, a little earlier than you.
Yeah.
You start off the CD, the one that we actually played to introduce this segment, with The Peeper, and mm-hmm. that was a kind of tribute to Hank Crawford.
Yeah, that's really more or less Hank's arrangement. And that was kind of the first tune that really stuck with me.
And you brought in an organ player, Joey DeFranco.
Joey DeFrancesco.
Francesco.
He is the greatest, this guy, man. He's a force of nature.
What is it about? There's been this long tradition of saxophones and organs in jazz.
It's just a compatible sound, you know, very compatible. The organ, to me, is a very warm, earthy, almost, it's an acoustic sound, even though it's an electronic instrument. It's a very, just kind of warm, it's like a comfortable pair of shoes or something, you know.
Another track on this, Hard Times, what Jerry Wexler called David Fathead Newman's theme, is also here. His sound is very different from Hank Crawford's.
Yeah, but it still had that same kind of bluesy gospel edge to it, you know.
Now, you also included some things of your own. You have a song here, a ballad that you wrote for your grandchild.
For my grandchild, yeah. I had just become a grandfather.
But just as blues-based as the Ray Charles material.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of in that mode, and my granddaughter was born, and I wrote this tune one day and brought it into the studio the next morning and kind of just passed out the music and showed it to the guys. We did a run-through. And I said, well, that sounds pretty good. I said to the engineer, why don't we record that? He said, I already did. So that's what's on the record, is the run-through.
Oh, wow. You were playing blues when you were just a kid. Now, you were playing with Little Milton?
I was playing with Little Milton Campbell, and I also played with Albert King.
I feel so bad. I feel like a ball game on a rainy day.
One of the greatest lines ever, like a ball game on a rainy day.
So I guess the blues are the only way you when you finally get down to it, the blues are where you always fall back on. But it's interesting, you know, that hasn't always been the case. You've composed like your saxophone was the distinctive in the theme song for L.A. Law, and that wasn't bluesy, was it?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to, you know, be objective about myself, but I've always thought of myself as playing kind of the same way, whatever context I'm in. Whether it's David Bowie or Miles Davis or James Brown or Gil Evans or whoever it is, James Taylor. I mean, I kind of, when I hear myself, I say, well, I'm kind of playing the same way I always play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it never occurred to me that was changing styles. I mean, I adapt a little bit to the context, but...
But you also have to adapt to the musicians you're with, don't you?
Because
jazz is really a conversation between the various musicians that are performing.
All music is, really. But I think it's certainly more so in jazz.
Well, you don't have a violinist or the symphony orchestra suddenly doing something totally
offhand
because they were inspired by something they heard from the horn section. But you could be playing with a keyboard player who plays something and your mind will go off in a totally different direction.
But I still think that my frame of reference is always the blues. And so whatever that, you know, I mean, there's ways of looking at harmony that where you can, you know, without getting too form, you know, theoretical about it, it's just a philosophy, I guess, you know, looking at everything as like kind of blues based.
I'm talking with alto saxophonist David Sanborn, whose latest CD from Decca, one of the great old labels, is called Only Everything. He's also performing at the Blue Note starting tomorrow. That's at 131 West 3rd Street between Avenue of the Americas and McDougal. And if you want more information about that, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. You also have written movie scores.
Well, I collaborated on some movie scores with Michael Kamen and Eric Clapton. We did the Lethal Weapon series.
And you did Scrooge, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I did some music for Scrooge, but not really the score. And I did some, there was a small Italian independent film I did once. I actually acted in it as well.
Many years ago, I spoke to this great trumpet player named Kenny Durham, and he said that if he wanted to test out a young musician, he never played very fast because they all worked that out.
Yeah.
He would play the slowest blues possible because that's how you find out whether people have ideas.
That's right.
And Dizzy Gillespie once said that Ray Charles's ballad tempos were so slow you could walk around the block between beats.
Have lunch between one and two, as they say.
So, and that's something that you you showcase here with Baby, Won't You Please Come Home. That's, you take that real slow. Is it as hard as Kenny Durham said to really come up with stuff when you're playing that slow?
Yeah, well, I think what it is you know, when you leave space, you got to know what you're doing. I mean, to me, it's the idea that the sound and the silence are of equal weight. You know, and music in a way is like interrupting the silence. You know, you're manipulating the space, like any art form, like painting, or, you know, it's the blank canvas or the empty stage. You know, you manipulate space, and I think music is like that. And you have to treat the silence with as much respect as you do the note that you play.
Why do you think Ray Charles liked those really slow ballads?
Because
he was a singer.
Just because he could do them. Because he could really, you know, he could, you know, really milk the emotion of it, you know, and it's so soulful and it's so personal, you know.
And it's
so
interesting.
Intimate.
And it's interesting that he sold an awful lot of country music records. I mean, this guy who came out of church and soul singing, although I guess Nat King Cole as well, he winds up having some of his biggest hits singing Hank Williams songs.
Well, they're great stories, you know. Country songs are great stories.
Well, tell us about performing with some of the singers you have in this album. Josh Stone, mm-hmm. who sings Let the Good Times Roll.
Yeah.
She sang a very different kind of song on the last record.
Yeah, yeah. She sang a Ray Charles tune, I Believe It to My Soul.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a phenomenal singer. She's, what, I think 22 now. And I first heard her when she was just a teenager. And she, how did this young girl from Devon, England, get this voice that sounds like you know, she's 60 years old and had a lifetime of experience. And,
you know, an English tenor player named Tubby Hayes, long gone, but he told me once that it was easier for him to assimilate all the American styles because he didn't grow up within all of the, he didn't have to deal with the race politics of America. When he was growing up in England, all he heard mm-hmm. was jazz. And I suspect that that's happened with a lot of the young English singers who have so assimilated all of soul music in a way that it would be hard for a young American singer who doesn't grow up in the church to do.
That's an interesting observation. I had never thought of it in that light, but I guess that's true. What, you know, removing the politics from the situation will probably give you a different, you know, because then you just listen to the music as the music. You don't have this, you know, background noise of other stuff.
Did you ask the singers what songs they wanted to do?
Well, I had an idea of what I wanted to do, and I both of the cases on this record, I suggested songs, and it turned out to be ones that they were okay to do.
James Taylor sings "Hallelujah, I Love Her So."
Yeah, well, James and I have been friends for a long time. I worked with him for years, and through the '70s and even into the '80s, and it turns out that he used to sing that song when he was first starting out, you know, and he always loved that song. And as James always does, he has his own unique take on whatever music he he sings, and he did on this.
Now, you began as a session player.
Not really. I was a sideman.
Yeah.
On the road with people.
Sidemen still have to adjust to the leader. And a lot of sidemen say that can be really frustrating because drummers especially.
they're always a problem.
Well, you recorded with Steve Gadd. Is he going to be at the Blue Note as well?
No, he's not going to be at the Blue Note.
Steve Gadd may be the greatest session drummer of the last 15, 20 years, right?
Yeah.
He could do anything. And he just seems to be able to play with anybody.
Yeah, it's a great talent to be able to do that. I mean, he's so musical, and he's able to, you know, find the music in any situation.
Well, what about you? You played with James Brown, Eric Clapton, Paul Simon, David Bowie, Little Feat, even the Grateful Dead.
Well, these are people that I was on the road with.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the sessions that I've done in my life have been as a soloist and, you know, on the road, playing on records with people that I was on the road with. So I think of a session musician as a guy who you call up and, mm-hmm. you know, shows up to the studio and does dates and does 5 or 6 or 7, 8 sessions a week. And if I did 1 or 2, that was a big month for me.
The next album going to have any more Ray Charles?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I haven't started thinking about that yet.
Meanwhile, we have David Sanborn's latest one called Only Everything on Decca, and he will be performing at the Blue Note at 131 West 3rd Street between Avenue of the Americas and McDougal from tomorrow through Sunday the 14th. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. Let's listen to something from the CD.
All right.